Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the HTI2 Proposed Rule Task Force Group 3 meeting on information blocking and TEFCA. I'm Peter Karras with ASDP, and I will serve as your designated federal officer today, acting on behalf of Seth Baczynski. This meeting is open to the public. Public feedback is welcomed throughout the meeting. Comments can be made via the Zoom chat feature. Also, as a reminder, there is scheduled time for verbal public comments towards the end of today's agenda. I will now begin the meeting with roll call of the HTI2 Proposed Rule Task Force Group 3 members. When I call your name, please indicate that you are present, and we will start with our co-chair, Rochelle Prosser.
Present. Good morning and afternoon.
Good morning. Shyla Blend.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Hans Botzendijk. Sooner Davenport has indicated that she will be absent for today's meeting. Derek DeYoung.
Present. I don't know if I'm muted though.
I can hear you, Derek.
All right, perfect.
Welcome. Steve Eichner.
Good morning.
Good morning. Lee Fleischer.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hannah Galvin.
Good morning.
Good morning, Hannah. Dominic Mack. Anna McAllister. And Katrina Miller-Parrish has indicated that she will be absent for today's meeting. Chris Mork.
I am here.
Hello. Eliel Oliveira. Randa Perkins.
Present.
Zeynep Sumar King has indicated that she'll be absent for today's meeting. Naresh Sundar Rajan.
Good morning.
Good morning. Cheryl Turney. Ray Walker.
Morning.
Good morning. Thank you, everyone. Is there anyone I missed who just joined the meeting that would like to indicate their presence?
Dominic sent an email stating that he's traveling back to the U.S. today and would try to make it unless he's already on the plane. So it looks like he won't be able to make it today.
Great. Thanks, Rochelle. All right. So please join me in welcoming our co-chair, Rochelle Prosser, for opening remarks and to kick off today's meeting. Rochelle, over to you.
Good morning, everyone. And thank you so much for these past weeks as we have worked really diligently to get to today's point where we actually discuss the recommendations and prepare this document to go over to the larger group next week when we meet with all the other sections of the HTI2 group and come together. So I thank all of you for all of your hard work. I have diligently been looking at your comments and working through the documents and making sure we are all included where it matters in the documents. And I thank you all for your hard work. It has been a tremendous task to come together in a few within these past few weeks. And I look forward to working on this document and completing this task. So thank you, all of you, for all of your input and hard work. Next slide, please. All right. So right now, where we are in the agenda is to begin looking at the task force recommendation sheet. But we have done the call to order, finished the opening remarks. And after we go through the recommendation worksheets, we will begin the public comment and then have the next steps and adjourn. Next slide, please. And I will give it to Peter.
Great. Thanks, Rochelle. We can actually just move on to slide 9, specifically get through the portion of our discussion today. This is going to be the breakdown. We'll have dedicated time towards these topic areas, starting with TEFCA, and then we'll go into the information blocking enhancements by various sections and subject areas. So I think with that, we can turn it over to Ben to do the screen share of the recommendation sheet.
All righty. Can everybody see the sheet?
Yes, Ben. Thank you so much.
Perfect. Just let me know in the chat or just give me a holler if you guys need to zoom in or move over. But yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. So we have had an opportunity to, one, look and add some comments. And where we agree, we've made those sections green. So on those areas, I will not be bringing that up to the group because we came to a consensus, unless there's something that the group wanted to add that we had missed. So for the purposes of the group, for line number two, if we can, we on this one, if we can make it a little bit bigger for me, Ben, that would be appreciated. I just want to read the proposed rule. To amend the definition of healthcare provider under 172.102 so that it explicitly is clear and it references 42 USC section 300JJ3. And for that purpose, it's definition, the terms laboratory and pharmacist have been meanings established for these terms. Respectfully, basically, we're adding in laboratory and pharmacist or the laboratory doctor as part of the healthcare provider definition. The second part is that we propose for the information blocking regulations under 45 CFR part 171, both health information technology and its short form health IT have the same meaning as health information technology. And then the third section of this element in terms of definition is to come to agreement on what the business day will entail. And we believe it is Monday to Friday and not including the weekends. All right. So if we can go to section J under line two. And so basically we agree. That we will cover that. And Chris, do you want to just unmute and just say your caveat here?
Say my caveat here.
Yes, you were talking about that the actors and the entities different than the actor is not a covered entity. In each case, examples of the actor or not covered entities would help.
Right, so I'm not entirely sure. I was trying to capture what I saw in the commentary and what I remembered from the commentary.
Okay, Ben, can you go over a few sections too where Chris's comments were just to just help her with her memory, jog the memory a little bit. There we go, section G.
So DM had provided some comments about exemption terms such as non-covered providers should be clarified. It's not clear what subset of providers this is referencing, et cetera. To my recollection of the conversation, all of the language is about actors more generally, which can include both covered and non-covered providers. But if there is confusion about that distinction, the recommendation to account for that commentary would be to make it more clear how there can be non-covered providers in addition to covered providers as actors.
Okay, thank you so much. Can we go over to section J, Ben, please? All right. So basically from the we further recommend that the ONC summarize the scenarios which proposed rule treats an actor as a covered entity different than an actor that is not a covered entity. In each case, examples of actors are not covered entities would help. Would it be best to have that as part of the fact sheet and to say the recommendation to add a clarification fact sheet on what a covered entity versus non-covered entity is? And is that found elsewhere in the CARES Act or in another applicable rule or existing law that references the HTI? And I'm not sure if that's already spelled out in the HTI one.
This is Steve. Mm-hmm. Recommending a fact sheet is something we can do. But that's more of a parking lot issue than it is modifying the regulation. It's a suggestion about communication, not a suggested regulatory change. I do think that something that's related to this that is a regulatory change would be specifying in regulation what is a non-covered actor or a non-HIPAA covered actor. For example, you know, public health, that example serves multiple roles. How information blocking applies to public health in its different roles is still a little bit of a question out there. You know, an example, public health serves as a laboratory, can serve as a healthcare provider in some circumstances, but much of our registry and public health surveillance work is not HIPAA covered.
I see. I was looking at the definition terms of healthcare provider to include those that are not traditionally added into the space, like the laboratory physician or the pharmacist. Although they are doctors in their own right, they're not necessarily seen in traditional definition of a healthcare provider. And so we were looking at the ability to include them. And so and that would fall into the covered and non-covered entity. I'm looking to ONC to help with this. Mark, thank you for the definition. Do you want to take yourself off mute and discuss that? Mark Nee?
Oh yeah, sorry, I'm muted. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
So just to be clear, we're talking about information blocking here, right?
Correct.
Those sections? Okay. Mm-hmm. So just to be clear, I'm here for TEFCA, but I did work on information blocking before, and I just wanted to share this resource that we put together that breaks down, it's like a table that breaks down the healthcare provider definition, which I think may get at what you guys are asking about. It's available on our website. So I just wanted to share that. I think it's a useful resource. Mm-hmm.
That was you, Ike, speaking earlier, correct?
Yes.
Would that suffice? Or do you actually want further clarification here within to remain with the statement from "we further recommend" examples of scenarios in the rule?
Sorry, I think that may suffice, but my bigger point was that we keep, from a comment perspective, keeping your comments focused on rule modification, it is a better use of our time mm-hmm. than looking at things that are outside rule modification.
Okay, that's a fair point. Fair point. Point well taken. All right, so I guess by a raise of hands for this part here, for the comment section, we further recommend that ONC summarize scenarios which propose rules that act the basically the language of saying, give us examples within the rule of what is a covered entity versus not a covered entity. For those that want to keep that language here and ask that, we recommend examples under the definition section. Please raise your hand in approval of leaving that language here and making that request.
Can I ask a question before?
Surely.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen a lot of Q&As in guidance.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen it in regulation. So I'm a little concerned about this recommendation. Sorry for a minute late, but mm-hmm. I would certainly be comfortable in regulation or urge ONC to develop guidance which includes those examples. I would be more comfortable as a friendly amendment.
So we have two things on the table. To say that we include case exactly definitions of examples within this rule, within the regulation, or to have ONC put guidance around the rule as as an example, maybe a fact or a guidance statement for what a covered entity and is or isn't. So that's what I'm hearing to hear is what we're clarifying. We're asking to either put it as into it as a definition and example within the rule or as a guidance. Are we clear? That's what I'm hearing.
That's what I suggest. I love ONC's belief, but I get concerned when you put examples into rules per se, as opposed to guidances, that you have to do rulemaking if one of the examples is not precise enough.
All right. So the first one of the covered entity, we only had three hands of the group based on the numbers. We would look now to Ray, if you want to put your hand down.
Oh, Rochelle, this is Steve. I looked quickly at the guidance sheet that ONC just shared. It does not include definitional terms for things like public health. It's a very, very narrow.
Very narrow.
In terms of what's defined. It does an excellent job of describing those elements, but it's pretty narrow in band.
Okay.
So it's unclear. Are those examples, or is that the entire catalog of what constitutes entities that are subject to information blocking? Because I think that's something that the community at large is really after at the end of the day. Am I in the pool or am I not in the pool?
I can see where that begins, but I also can see ONC's point in saying for those healthcare providers that we didn't provide clarity around, let's standardize the meaning of healthcare provider and include all areas where healthcare providers are and other areas where they're not seen as a healthcare provider and include them.
Right. I guess part of the issue here, broadly speaking, is what we mean by a healthcare provider as an individual versus healthcare provider as an entity or a facility, and what role that particular individual is playing in that particular component.
So are we actually splitting hairs here is the question that I'm asking, because entity or healthcare provider, an entity can be a developer, an entity can be a company, but an entity can also be a healthcare provider. So I think I'm wondering if a guidance would be better, Mark, or anyone from ONC.
Hi. So can you, can you explain one more time what the guidance would cover that you're talking about?
So right now we're looking at standardizing the definitions for healthcare provider, the definition just in general. I'm trying to, Ben, can you move to the left, please? I'm trying to move my own screen. If you can move, yes, all the way to the definition part. Yeah, one more. There we go. And so they're trying to standardize the terms of what a healthcare provider is. And within that definition, we come to covered and non-covered entities that are also added to the definition of healthcare providers. And an example that they give in terms is laboratory, where there is an actual healthcare provider. He's a laboratory doctor that reviews the labs and signs off on the results to ensure that we have compliance and accuracy. And then we have the pharmacist, which is also a part of the care team, but they also are a healthcare provider. And so we just wanted to make sure that these entities and these individuals, even though they would be seen as an entity such as the laboratory, there is actually a healthcare provider there, and wanted to standardize across all areas of government to just make sure that ONC is having the same definition as HHS, is having the same definition as elsewhere. I hope, does that help clarify?
Yeah, I think so. If Ben has thoughts, I welcome them. I will say I wasn't a point on this in drafting, but I would think that comment would be welcomed. I think that seems like that might be something that could be addressed in preamble, just the clarification that, certain types of entities should be cut, just to clarify that they would be covered under the definition. I think it sounds like that's a fine recommendation to make, as long as it doesn't, cause any misalignment with the existing definition. It seems like it's more of a clarification, if I'm understanding, which would probably be preamble.
Okay. So, okay, by a vote of hands, if we can go back to column J, please. By a vote of hands, putting a guidance from the ONC regarding the difference between entity and non-covered entity to provide more clarity under the definition of healthcare provider. For those that are in favor of a guidance and changing the language here, we further recommend ONC summarize these scenarios. And the word instead would be, we recommend that ONC provide guidance on the scenarios of a covered entity than an actor that is not a covered entity. If those are in agreement, please raise your hands.
Friendly amendment, guidance and rule, and ONC can interpret that, or ASGP can interpret that as they see fit, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, so Mark jumping in again, just noting that, I guess, guidance, I think maybe this is what Ike's getting at, guidance has a very broad, it can mean different things. And I think what you're trying to get at is that ONC should clarify this point in the rule. Is that right? Or are you saying that you want some additional guidance, not sub-regulatory guidance to be released to address this? Because those are two different things.
Mm-hmm. And my amendment, it's Lee, was deferring to ONC whether or not it was rule or sub-regulatory guidance in the formal sense of sub-regulatory guidance.
This is Steve. My friendly suggestion was to include recommendation as regulatory guidance, or ASDP may or may not interpret that and go forward that. They may then interpret it as other forms of guidance, but my recommendation would be on the regulatory side so that there's greater clarity and reliability for the affected partners rather than just, broader guidance.
This is Holmes. Should regulatory guidance be considered regulatory guidance, or would that be defined differently? Because I'm agreeing with the commenter. I think that was Lee. I'm on the phone, so I can't see it. But I believe that the flexibility on where it goes in the rule, the preamble, sub-regulatory, something else, that there's some flexibility is appropriate there to avoid that the examples become limiting. They are extensive, but we might not have the full set defined there either. So that's where I also have caution, is that how much can be in the rule versus how much can be in preamble versus sub-regulatory clarification or other guidance.
And I just want to flag real quick that we are past time on this section, but from what I'm hearing, it seems like guidance tends to be the word of choice, leaving it up to interpretation by ASTP so as not to be too specific in terms of the solution or the type or in what location the guidance would be provided.
That is my preference. I'll just go out there and say it. That would be my preference. That way we can make sure it is as inclusive at its time. And yes, I'm aware that the timer we are on this. I just feel that this particular language, we want to get it right for the sake of going forward and providing the appropriate recommendation. So guidance with ONC flexibility to determine where it would sit, whether it's in the actual rule, the preamble, or as an actual guidance, as Lee has mentioned. And from the sign of hands from before, everyone was looking as a guidance without to let ONC to determine the flexibility. And if we
my
are
in verbal a... hand is in, on that line, my verbal okay. hand, so I cannot raise
okay.
it.
Perfect. Sorry. All right. So I think we have consensus here with adding, perfect. Thank you. And then we'll work on this tomorrow just to clean it up more, but to add regulatory guidance as ONC clarifies. All right, perfect. So can we reset the timer and move on to the next line, section 3, or row 3, please, Ben. And if we can go all the way to the left, please. And Axel, can you please reset the timer? Thank you. All right, can we go to the actual rule itself just a little bit further? Okay, so we are on section 171.104 with the terms of interfere with or interference. And we are saying the update is the term interfere or interference is currently defined in section 171.102 and informed concerns and questions that interested parties have brought to our attention. We propose that section 4A3 add section 171.104 to the information blocking that would codify certain practices, acts, and omissions that constitute interference for the purpose of information blocking definition as codified in section 171.103. And the proposed codified practices are not an exhaustive list, but additional practices described in the purpose of rule 171.104 that are likely to interfere with, prevent, or mainly discourage access exchange or the use of electronic health information may also be considered to rise to the level of interference. The proposed codification to these practices is intended to provide actors and those who seek to engage in electronic health information access, exchange, or use with actors, certainly that these specific practices constitute interference. The codification of these practices may also help regulate entities and other interested parties to consider the likelihood that any practice or act might contemplate or engage may also meet the definition of interference and interfere with as defined in rules 171.102 for the purpose of information blocking regulations under 45 CFR part 171. Ooh, so with that, can we move to column G, please? Because Sooner is not here. And Sooner is saying from the Indian Health section, is this an appropriate section to include with the compliance and laws is not considered information blocking. Therefore, 171 overrides federal, state, and tribal law predictions, patient privacy that might potentially limit the sharing of information. And to answer that, it is her section is covered under the Cures Act, under which most of the information blocking under the HTI-1 and the HTI-2 rule has originated out of. So with that said, let's go to section J and we can begin the timer, please, Axel.
Okay.
So for the purpose of the group, it says they, Dominic, who is not here, but has said he agrees with the rule change. The language is broad and encompassing, allowing for proper interpretation by governing bodies without being too descriptive and running the risk of conflict with state, region, and tribal policies. And then Chris, the language is, the work group supports the proposed language from AST, P, and ONC. And with that said, by a show of hands, do we all agree? Do we all agree that we agree with the proposed language to ensure that we are making sure it's broad, but not too broad? Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
My verbal hand is up.
7, thank you. So Ike, Sarah, Ray, Naresh, Maggie, would you like to comment? I have 7 hands. Is it 7? 1, 2.
I agree, I just hadn't raised my hand.
Okay, 7, 8, okay. So it's 3 that have not said, and thank you, Ray, for putting up your hand. Anyone else that want to put a comment? Okay. All right. I would say that that is a majority. So Sheila and Hannah and Naresh, would you like to say who disagrees? All right. So we know who agrees. Raise your hand who disagrees. So everyone put your hands down, if we can lower all the hands. Those that disagree and say they are not, okay, your hand is up, Hannah. So I have Derek, Ike, Hannah, and I don't see any other hands that are in disagreement. Derek and Ike.
No, I just didn't lower it fast enough.
Oh, okay. Okay, Hannah.
Same boat.
What was that?
Same boat.
As a yes.
Yes, I had lowered my hand fast enough.
Okay, that's a yes. So Hannah, you said no?
No, I had my hand up.
Okay, all right. Naresh is the only one I don't have a yes or a no. Do you want to take yourself up mute and say yes or no, or? Okay, he's not voting. All right. So by that, I would say we have a majority. So we will let the rule stand in column 3. So can we make this section green, please? Thank you. Perfect. All right. So let's go into row number 4 in ACTEL. If you can please reset the timer. Okay. Under here, I actually want to break it up a little bit as we talk about each bullet point, because there's more to discuss and unpack here. So for the first bullet point, in proposing a new protective care access exemption, that would be under specified conditions. So I'm talking about section rule 171.206, proposing a new protective access, care access exemption, that would under specified conditions in section 4B, 3.B through D. And the draft regulatory text of the proposed rule 171.206 apply to acts or emissions likely to interfere with the access exchange or particular electronic health information that an actor believes could create a risk of exposing patients, care providers, and other persons who assist in access or delivery of healthcare to potential administrative, civil, or criminal investigations or other actions or certain biases. All right, so they are saying patients should be able to say yes or no as to what they, as to what they wish to access. So that is the first part. The second part in accessing the protective access exemption under 171.206 is not intended to override any provision of another law that is independently applicable to the actor. So we want to make sure that we're setting this clear. A patient has the right, or another person has the right, to block or share or request to share, but as long as they are covered within the confines of other pre-existing laws. So I just want to make that clear. Second, the third bullet is that practices that propose protecting access care exemption 171.206 would except from the information blocking definition would be those implemented based on the actor's good faith belief that sharing electronic health information indicating that any person thought, received, provided, or facilitated the provision of the receipt of the reproductive health care that was lawful under circumstances in which it was provided could result in a risk of potential exposure to legal action for those persons, and that the risk could be reduced by practices likely to interfere with particular access, exchange, or use of specific health information, electronic health information. So that's a lot. Line number four. So in line number three, we were saying that under reproductive health, we want to make sure that for those that wish to withhold or wish to share and are doing so on the basis of protective measures to ensure the confidentiality, HIPAA, et cetera, that they would be covered and not be considered information blocking. Finally, for the section four, for the purposes of protecting care access exemption, we would propose to rely on the same definition of reproductive health care, which can be found in 45 CFR 160.103, that is used for the purposes of HIPAA. In addition, we discussed in section 4B3B how we would interpret whether care is lawful under the circumstances in which it is provided. And so this is where we will align with HIPAA under this regulation for reproductive health care and everything that is covered and included within reproductive health care. Finally, to satisfy the proposed new protective care access of 171.206 exception, an actor's practice would need to satisfy the threshold conditions and at least one of the two recommendations, okay? So it is from a legal point, they're shielded, or from a health policy point, they're shielded. I just want to go over that. And finally, we are looking at it from an under 171.206A, B, section 1A, section A2, section A3, and et cetera, going down into B, C, D. We want to look at it from an organizational standpoint under policy or case-by-case determination, and not to be seen as punitive if an act of God occurred, because we are in areas where act of gods occur. And if we go under the confines of a certain time to return the information or provide the information, and it's not possible to do so, that is not to be considered information blocking for the purpose of the rest of this document. And just summarizing it thusly. So without further ado, let's go to section G. And under there, we've had a lot of agreements and a lot of protections, and ONC was very helpful in helping us work through the different areas. And I think we came to a general consensus under J, if we can move to section J, and Axel, if you can start the timer, we came to a general agreement that we agree to the legislative changes and the definition and broader definition of what reproductive care is under HIPAA, but Dominic and Chris, you had some revisions and additions to add. And Lori, LAF, I just want to make sure I say the name. Is she here? LAF. Ben, do you know who LAF is? If you want to take yourself off mute, or you can tell me.
I do not.
You do not.
Yeah.
Okay. And Chris, you were adding, you wanted some examples or recommendations or guidance under gender affirming care as part of the reproductive system in some manner?
I think my recommendation would be to the preamble language.
Okay.
That there be something about noting, and I think the follow-on recommendations are good. Strike politically sensitive. I like the terminology that DM has, that Dominic has put in there about if you in good faith adopt an expansive interpretation. And basically, in the preamble, recognize that if your organization in good faith uses a broad definition of the of reproductive care because it affects the reproductive system in any way, that from ONC's perspective, that is that good faith interpretation is something that is covered by the Protecting Care Access exception. But I do think that it should be explicit in the preamble that ONC understands there is considerable latitude, and anybody who uses a good faith interpretation is covered by this. I recognize that we're trying to encourage people to read between the lines, maybe, that there is some flexibility there, but to make it clear, it's okay to do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So my suggestion in coming to consensus with the group, and Mark, feel free to chime in, so you're saying that the preamble is the best place to look rather than the HIPAA privacy, Kim, Chris? I just want to make sure I'm hearing you correctly.
I think so. The definition that we're working with of reproductive care is nailed down. We're not, that does not get to be changed.
Okay.
We looked at it in the discussion, and the definition that was pulled from that legislation said that reproductive care was essentially healthcare that affected the reproductive system in any way. I don't remember the exact language, but yes. It basically just said if it touches the reproductive system, it's reproductive care.
Mm-hmm.
Don't touch that definition, but acknowledge that is that definition is one that if you in good faith apply beyond just like fertility treatment and abortion, don't even need the specific examples, just if you treat this as broadly as it was written, you're in good shape.
Okay. So your suggestion, so let's go back to your suggestion, because from what I'm hearing is that you're in agreement using the broader definition in alignment of what reproductive health is good enough. And you're saying as that ONC should make an example to suggest that gender affirming care would be considered as all encompassing under the broader definition of reproductive care. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
I think what you said is maybe too broad.
Too broad. Okay.
I don't think ONC should say that gender affirming care is necessarily reproductive care, because I think that some organizations, I will avoid them if they make this stance, but if they say that gender affirming care doesn't affect the reproductive system, fine. We don't get to control, we don't get to dictate their interpretation of that definition taken from elsewhere. But if they, if somebody does treat some forms of gender affirming care, and I was very specific about saying some forms or many forms, you know, like any sort of hormone therapy has an effect on the reproductive system. There are other things that don't. Forms of breast augmentation or reduction surgery, it might get difficult to include that under reproductive care, especially under augmentation. Acknowledge that. So it's not all forms of gender affirming care, but many of them do touch the reproductive system somehow. And if you choose as a provider to adopt that broad definition and therefore restrict access using the Protecting Care Access exemption, then you're okay. That's all.
Okay. I need Lee's help. And so Lee is LAF. He is stating that as part of that suggestion, and then Dominic's recommendation that they add explicit language to any actor who in good faith adopts an expansive interpretation of reproductive care is covered by Protecting Care Access exception. And Lee is stating that we should be very careful, we should be very careful, and would link it to the statute and certainly not the term politically sensitive. So he's asking us to remove the word politically sensitive topics from that and saying that we want to be careful in how far we bring that broader definition to narrow focus under examples. And I'm having a lot of lightning in my area, so I apologize if you hear the thunder. So we want to be careful. We want to make sure that we remain within the confines of the definition of HIPAA and what has already been predetermined under the rule. And so I open this up to a bit of assistance on the revision. I agree with you, Chris, and also Ray, in terms of the gender affirming care. I think that if we add language to say we agree, but if we bring in language that any actor in good faith adopts an expansive interpretation of reproductive care is covered by Protecting Care Access exception. I would like to add that language in and then remove the examples. I live in a state where this is targeting, and I would hate to see that the legislation goes down by death by a million cuts because we're giving pathways of examples. So I open it up to the floor. Axel, can we just add an additional 5 minutes in this section, please? This is a hot topic. By a show of hands, can you concur? Do you disagree with adding language? Any actor in good faith that adopts expansive interpretation of reproductive care is covered by the Protective Care Access exemption. That specific language. By a show of hands, is there anyone who is not in agreement? Hold on, Chris. Who is not in agreement with adding that information, that language? Not. Okay. By a show of hands, can you, for those that are in agreement to add language that any actor who in good faith adopts an expansive interpretation of reproductive care is covered by the Protecting Care Access exemption? Raise your hand if you agree to that, adding that language. Ray, Chris, Shelley, Dr. Perkins, Derek. Hans, are you in agreement or disagreement? Ike?
I'm abstaining at the moment.
Thank abstaining? You. Okay, Hans, are you abstaining?
I'm double mute. I'm abstaining.
Abstaining, okay. So I currently, all right, so I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Five in agreement, 6 in agreement, and 2 abstains, and no no's at this time. Okay, you can if everyone can lower their hands, please. Mark, I'm going to ask your countenance here. Mark Nee, is there, from an ONC or TEFCA position, that it would be an issue in the recommendation of adding any actor in good faith adopts an expansive interpretation of reproductive care is covered by protecting care access exemption? I want to hear from you.
Hey, Rochelle, thanks for the question.
I'm so sorry.
Did I interrupt you?
No, that's the thunder that just went on. I kind of jumped. I'm so sorry. I apologize.
Oh, boy. Okay. I hope you're all right. So I guess one clarifying point is that, so this is different. This is totally separate from TEFCA. So this is the information blocking piece. So I think if I'm following the recommendation you guys are thinking about is, work group recommends that ASTP-ONC adds explicit language that any actor who in good faith adopts an expansive interpretation of reproductive care is covered by the exception. It seems like that, you know, that's the recommendation. That's fine. I think, you know, I think ONC will have to consider the breadth and scope of the recommendation and whether it strikes the right balance. But I think it's a fine recommendation. I don't know if Ben has any thoughts as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When we had the discussion on this earlier, Rachel, who's the point person on it, said that we would definitely take it under consideration to sort of have that broader. And I think it's a fair interpretation, but I can't really go further than that. Make comment on like what a broader, since that would be sort of out of my zone. But I definitely it would be a fine comment, and we could. Take that into consideration when the
going forward.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. For Stephen, for those that abstained, is there a reason to abstain that you wish to share for the group in the last 30 seconds before we move on? Hans or Ike?
Not at this time. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Okay. So we can... understanding the folks on the group, we can add this recommendation is as a recommendation, but understand that this may not go forward based on once we come together with all of the group and then coming from ONC when we finally go to the final draft. And if you're okay with that, then we can move on to the next section. Thank you, Timer. Thank you, Axel. And I would say that it is a majority approval with 2 abstentions at this time. Thank you very much. Ben, when you're finished, let's go on to line item number, I believe it's, is it 4 or 5? Peter, where are we on this?
It'd be 5.
5, okay, thank you. Okay. So if we can move down to line 5. All right. And the infeasibility, I think we touched on this. And I think from the consensus, we came to an agreement under section 174.204 under infeasibility that it would be a 10-day segment from 10 days from the rule. We had a few choices within there, up to 30 days. And we said a 10-day response is reasonable. I'm just reading if there's anything else. underneath there. Yeah, so if we want to just go to section G, it's basically the time frame in this section. How long are we going to give a provider to respond? And Hans made the suggestion that infeasibility under the circumstances should follow the same 10 business days from determination to inability. And I think that was the general consensus in, so if we can move to section J. And Axel, can you start the timer of 5 minutes, please? Ben, can we move to section J, please? Good. Okay. And so the language here is we came to an agreement. However, Dominic was mentioning he's not clear as a non-covered provider. I think that's synonymous with our questions in section one on an covered and uncovered entity. So I think we've addressed that in the prior definitions. And his comment is, as described in HIPAA policy, but ONC may need to clarify the definition to fit the TEFCA rule. So this is more specific to you, Mark. Basically, a non-covered provider under HIPAA, and how would ONC may need to clarify this definition under TEFCA specifically if it's not clear. Do you mind providing some insight to us here before we move on? Mark.
Sure, yes. I'm just trying to read the comments. So is there more, so the question is about defining non-HIPAA entity, is that the question?
Yes. A non-covered provider under the HIPAA as an entity.
Okay.
Along the lines of what we discussed in section one.
Okay, yeah, I think that's a fine comment. Trying to think, I think you're probably right. I'm assuming that if there's not that definition, that we may have that definition included within the common agreement and the SOPs. So I think it would be easy to include if that's the case. It's defined somewhere, I believe. So I think that's a fine comment to make. Okay.
All right. So as long as we understand that ONC will provide that clarification definition under the TEFCA rule, are we all good to go ahead and say 10 days is an appropriate time for an entity provider or otherwise to say they are either able or unable to provide the feedback? So by show of hands, one, it's two things we're voting on: to provide a clearer definition by ONC to under the TEFCA section on the, and as described in the HIPAA policy, that a non-covered provider is part of and part parcel covered within the TEFCA rule and definitions where it's not clear. And Mark is saying it's written elsewhere in the SOP just to bring it forward. So that first part is to provide that definition. So by a show of hands, to put a clarifying definition for ONC.
Michelle, I have a question before raising your hand on the question you asked.
Yes.
I'm only wondering here about the sequel or the direction in which we go here, and if it can be clarified, that may need to clarify the definition to fit the TEFCA rule, or is it the other way around? So I just want to make sure, is the direction in which we ask to clarify the correct action, since TEFCA is following rules. I'm not sure whether in this context it sets a rule. So I just want to make sure.
I think it is to fit the TEFCA rule. As Mark has mentioned, it's already written in the SOPs. It's just not high enough for the reader to say, okay, this now fits. And would you agree with that, Mark, or not?
So just to clarify, I can look right now to see where it is. But, I mean, the bottom line is this regulation should be looked at, you know, to stand on its own. So if there's a gap there and there's not a definition that would be helpful for you all to understand what we're talking about in the regulation, I think that's a very reasonable thing to, make a comment on. What my comment was kind of out of scope in a way, because even if we have the definition of non-HIPAA entity in the other TEFCA documents, mm-hmm. Like I said, the regulation needs to stand on its own. So your comment would be fine for something to include here.
Okay, thank you. And thank you, Hans, for asking that clarification. All right, so the recommendation is to add something that would allow the TEFCA rule to not only be included, fit within the rule, but also stand on their own as what a non-covered provider is the first one. By show of hands, do we agree with adding that recommendation here? Okay, I have six. All right, everyone, if you can lower your hands, please. Okay, if you can lower your hands. For those who are not in agreement to adding the language here for definition clarifying of non-covered provider, if you can raise your hand if you do not agree adding the recommendation to have a clarification. Okay, I don't see any lowered hands. Okay, for those who want to abstain from making a definition, raise your hands. Okay, so I see Ike, and I'm sorry, my line is not functioning here. I see Ike and
I don't have a hand up.
Oh, you don't have a hand up. Okay, all right. Okay, so we will adopt the definition, and thank you, Mark, for providing that non-HIPAA QHIN definition.
Yeah, so just, yeah, I put it in the chat, and I found it. It's in the, I added the link. There's the TEFCA glossary, which includes, you know, a full range of all the terms used in TEFCA. So, yeah, I think a recommendation like that, if we feel like it's necessary, would be pretty easy to incorporate.
Okay, perfect. All right. So the next question becomes, are we all in agreement of adopting 10 days for this rule? So raise your hand if you are in agreement that 10 days is long enough.
For the clarification, 10 business days.
Using 10 business days. Yes, 10 business days. Thank you.
You're using the business day.
Yes, business days.
And furthermore, using the business day modification up above.
Correct. So for those, am I sharing? I'm so sorry. Am I sharing my screen or are you seeing the actual document?
We're still seeing the spreadsheet.
Okay, thank you. All right. For those that want to agree that 10 business days is appropriate, please raise your hands. Okay, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Hans, you were in there, yes? Okay. All right. Lower your hands, everyone. Okay. For those that are not in agreement with 10 days, please raise your hands. Okay. The only reason why I asked, Sheila, you didn't have your hand up, or are you abstaining? Sheila? All right. She may have stepped away. We have a majority for 10 days, the rule. Wonderful. Okay. Axel, if you can please reset the timer. And Ben, once you're finished typing, can we go to line 6? And how much time do we have left? Peter?
Yeah, we need to start the public comment by 12:20.
Okay. All right. Perfect. Thank you. I think we should be able to. Line item 6, we came to agreement on already. So if we can skip over line row 6 and go to row 7. Okay. All right. Row 7 is stating that requester preference exception, that the requester preference we propose to slightly modify the header to ease the reference individual request not to share electronic health information. More importantly, we revise subsection 171.202 sub exception to remove the existing limitation that allows exception to be used only for individual requesting restrictions on EHI sharing that are permitted by other applicable law. The proposal would extend the availability of 171.202E sub-exception to an actor's practice or of applying restrictions the individual has requested on access, exchange, or use of an individual's electronic health information, even when the actor may have concern that another law applicable to some or all of the actor's operation could compel the actor to provide access, exchange, or use of electronic health information contrary to the individual's expressed wishes. Basically, we are trying to say, and correct me if I'm wrong, Owensy, that it is going to be the preference of the patient that, or the person asking as the individual, regardless of whether there is another law that would be harmful. But we also want to defer to that individual's privacy and preference. So if they want to share it, fine. If they don't want to share it, that individual takes precedence. That's my understanding. If we can move to section G, we have our comments as to from the members, and we had a lot of robust conversation along the lines of mental health, along the lines of HIPAA concerning diagnoses that would be punitive under certain industries or regulations. And we thank the ONC for their wonderful and clear direction and guidance on that. Based on these, we would have them as revisions or additions for further clarification, but not necessarily to be modified under this rule. But your comments are very, very valid and welcomed. So with that, Excel, if you can, you've started the timer. Thank you. Ben, can we move to section J? And for the purposes of this group, thank you, Derek. The group recommends consolidating the existing content and manner exception to cover both the content and manner in which electronic health information is provided, reducing redundancy and simplifying the regulatory framework. Additionally, ASTP should provide clear guidance to prevent healthcare provider or IT developers from unintentionally steering requesters towards easier or more convenient options for sharing electronic health information, ensuring that requesters can make fully informed decisions without undue influence. That is a lovely summary. Yes, go ahead, Derek.
I tried to convey both Hans and I think it was Chris's comments from column, whatever's before H, G. But I realized, I apologize, I didn't see your email, the email that came out yesterday to try and get that recommendation in there. So I tried to do it quick I hopped on.
This is fine. For ONC, for content and manner, and that would be Ben, and also for TEFCA, Mark, can you please provide your thoughts on the words content and manner exception? just to ensure that we are in compliance of the rule. Do you have any comment this time? For or against?
Go ahead.
Okay. Can you clarify what the issue? I mean, I guess you could use whatever terms you want. I believe the exception is now the manner exception. I believe content was phased out because of the time frame related to the change in the content standard. So I guess there could be some confusion there, but I think they would generally know what you're talking about either way.
Okay. Ben, are you in concurrence with that?
Yes. And it obviously will take this comment under advisement like all the others, and we do appreciate it. It's it is something that we'll look at.
Okay.
And I wanted to make sure, I don't know if Hans, if you wanted to chime in. Sorry, this is Derek, but I was trying to pull that out of your comment. So I don't know if you wanted to.
Yeah, it's Mark confused me for a moment, but I'm with that if I heard him correctly, that content is removed.
Yes.
So, but I don't believe that with perhaps the word removal, that the intent of what we're talking about here would still then not align with it. So I believe is that the intent is to, as Derek summarized, that we want to avoid potential duplication and ambiguity between two exceptions that are actually trying to achieve the same thing. So if we make this recommendation and then as ONC contemplates and looks at it, but with the emphasis that we're trying to reduce duplication and ambiguity, then from that, they might be able to find the right spot to achieve that. That was really the intent, because as we have been experiencing and working with the content and manner to date, and then this is being presented as a new separate one, to us, it really sounded like you're really trying to describe another flavor of the same concept. That's where the comment was coming from. We're trying to add, if you will, another example or another flavor or another aspect to it that really follows the same as what's happening in what we work with as content and manner. So if we address that, then ONC can work through it and help make sure that it is as clear and unambiguous as possible, because there was not a pushback on the intent. Okay. It was just the placement and the risk of ambiguity and duplicity.
Okay. And so it's just, you would like just more clarification, just so I have it, what you're recommending is that you want more clarification on what the differences are, and to put that in like a preamble. So just sort of more regulatory explanation of what the differences is.
Either that or combine them if there's truly no
difference. Okay.
Since we don't see it in that way, but if that can be clarified one way or the other, so that the ambiguity is not there, that's what we're trying to get to.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, completely understand. And number one, thank you for giving me that clarification.
Excellent.
Not how to phrase it. Mm-hmm.
And Mark was thank you very much for providing this link in the chat to. Title 4, 5, Subtitle A, Chapter D, Part 171, Subpart C, and Section 171.301 for further clarification. Do you just want to give a little very quick synopsis of what we would be looking at there before we go to the next part? And our time is up.
It clarifies my surprise that Mark raised when he said Kant is gone. And apologies, in our discussions from the HR perspective, we for some reason still refer to this content and manner.
Okay, all right. So Hans, can I have you go back in and clarify or update the content and manner part to the proper language and assist Ben so that we can make this clearer? And knowing that content and matter has been removed, but the intent and the understanding of what the overall arching confine is, we are in agreement. that we just want a little bit clarification.
I think it's as easy as removing the word. Yeah.
Okay. Moving command. All yeah. right. So in the group, but the show of hands, are we in agreement with providing this recommendation to ONC regarding this law? By show of hands, please raise your hands. I have 1, 2, 3. Oh, okay. 4, 5. Steve? Mm-hmm. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I have 6 at this time. Anyone else? Okay. 7. Thank you. All right, we have 7. If we can lower our hands, anyone in opposition to adding this recommendation, please raise your hand at this time. All right, I have no hands raised. All right, line item 8 has already been adopted and agreed to by all of us within the work group. So we will move over. And line 8 was looking at just the administrative updates.
Hey, Rochelle,
just
to jump in, I do want to leave time for a public comment. Okay. However, if we do have some time at the end, we can definitely yield back to use the remainder.
All right. So that's fine. We would be stopping at line item 9 anyway. So that's fine. That's good.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So at this time, we would like to open the meeting for a public comment. If you are on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function, which is located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you are on the phone only, press *9 to raise your hand. Once called upon, press *6 to mute and unmute your line. And I will pause for a moment to see if we do have any comments from the public, whether by phone or via hand raised. I am not seeing anything, but I will wait a few more moments. Seeing no comments via phone, no hands raised. While we're waiting, just a reminder that next week's task force meetings will be a series of the 3 full group task force meetings starting on September 3rd and then going on the 4th and then the 5th. And a reminder to everyone that all high-tech meeting materials can be found on healthit.gov. And I am not seeing any hands raised, not seeing any comments. So Rochelle, I can definitely yield back some of the time over to you. Before closing out.
All right, thank you. If we could have 5 minutes before I go through the closing comments to just go back to the spreadsheet and look at line item number 9. Just quickly for line item 9. We're at 10. Yes, right here. Thank you. Okay, if we can go over to the recommendation, and we are talking about QHINs. And so there's 3 things that we had to decide. One, do we want to continue with the FHIR and QHIN together, separate the two, or go with the FHIR? That was one. And then 2, what is the threshold that would be appropriate within that? And then the TEFCA network exchanges. So if we can move to section J and okay, so group, we have to come together. So we agreed that it was a threshold of 5% or under was good. We also agreed that the QHIN would take precedence, but I need some additional volunteers to assist me with that. So if Lee, I know Lee will be meeting with me after to provide work group recommendations for this section. And Hans, I would love your input, please. And anyone else that would like to provide that, I think Chris if you have time to meet with us tomorrow so that we can address this. Right now we support most of the scenarios, but I think there's a little bit more that we would like to say in what that recommendation is. 11 a.m. So we will pass by this one and go to number 10. Please, Chris, Ben, just scroll right down. Just scroll down. Mm-hmm. Okay, I think this is the administrative updates. Oh, we're on 8. We're going to 10, please. Oh, that is line 10. Yes, I think we agreed on the administrative updates.
We did.
Okay. All right. So if you could just send me your availability, Ike, Hans, and Chris, and anyone else that would like to meet with me tomorrow to go over row number 9, I'm more than happy to meet with you at a time that we can all agree to come together. And with that, I will begin closing remarks. All right. So our upcoming meetings, we again, as Peter had mentioned, we will be meeting in a succession of 3 meetings on September 3rd, 4th, and 5th. And then finally delivering all of our recommendations, our consolidated recommendations on the 12th to the high tech committee. Next slide. And I just want to thank you all for the hard work. We have come together on pretty much all of the rules, except for one that will have some clarification just in terms of writing what we will agree. And I do thank you all for your hard work. And I look forward to all of us coming together on the 3rd, the 4th, and the 5th next week to finalize to the broader group how we will move forward with the HTI rule. I thank all of you, and I would like to give 1 minute back to adjourn the meeting. Peter.
Thank you so much, Rochelle. This concludes our meeting. Thank you, everyone, for joining, and have a great rest of your day.